Hey everyone, and welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. We're back with another deep dive. You know, we love to take you beyond the headlines and explore the why behind the big cybersecurity news stories. And today we've got three stories that really make you think about the darker side of digital security.
Yeah, some shady stuff going on for sure.
So let's jump right in. Our first story revolves around the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. You know them as CISA. And there are these reports that they've been directed to stop monitoring Russian cyber activity.
But they're denying it.
They're very publicly denying.
Which is interesting because some sources are saying that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered a halt to offensive cyber operations against Russia.
And that this order came down during negotiations with Russia.
The supposed negotiations.
Right.
So you've got CISA pushing back pretty hard against these reports.
Oh, yeah. Trisha McLaughlin, who's the Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Department of Homeland Security, she straight up called the leaked memo garbage. She says CISA's mission hasn't changed at all. They're still focused on defending against all cyber threats.
All cyber threats, right?
Right.
But then you have these reports claiming that a senior U.S. official is worried that if the U.S. does ease up on its offensive cyber operations against Russia, it could leave us more vulnerable to cyber attacks from Moscow.
And to make things even more confusing, one of our listeners pointed out that there aren't even any active negotiations happening with Russia right now.
At least not publicly.
Right. So that really makes you wonder, what's the real story here? Could there be other reasons for this potential shift in strategy?
Makes you think, doesn't it? What if this whole thing isn't about de-escalation at all? Maybe it's a way to try and catch Russia off guard or a reaction to some new intelligence we don't know about.
It's definitely a head scratcher. Ignoring a major player in the cyber world like Russia seems like a risky move, especially with their history.
Yeah. They're not exactly known for being passive.
No. Not at all. Okay, so let's move on to our next story. This one takes us into the world of zero-day exploits, and it really highlights that constant back and forth between governments and tech companies.
A real cat and mouse game.
Exactly. So Google had to recently patch two zero-day vulnerabilities in Android, and one of them was reportedly exploited by Serbian authorities to unlock devices they had confiscated.
Yeah, to get into those devices.
So before we get into the specifics, maybe you can explain what a zero-day vulnerability is for those who might not be familiar with the term.
Sure. So basically, it's a flaw in software that the developers don't even know about yet.
Oh, so it's like a secret backdoor into a system?
Exactly. And someone else has already found it and is using it to their advantage.
So there's no catch available.
Mm-hmm.
No fix.
Nope.
That sounds pretty scary.
It can be. And in this case, this particular zero day was reportedly used by Serbian authorities to unlock devices they had confiscated.
Whoa. So governments are using these super secret vulnerabilities to access people's devices.
It seems
that raises some serious questions about privacy. And how far is too far when it comes to law enforcement?
Absolutely. It's a real ethical tightrope walk, trying to balance the need to investigate crimes with respecting individual rights.
And the fact that private companies are developing these powerful tools adds another layer of complexity to the whole situation.
For sure. So this case is particularly interesting because the tool they used to exploit this vulnerability was reportedly developed by Cellebrite,
which is an Israeli digital forensics company.
Right.
Okay, so technically speaking, what were these vulnerabilities all about?
Well, one of them involved the Linux kernel's driver for human interface devices.
Which basically controls how things like your keyboard and mouse talk to your system.
Exactly. And the other one was a privilege escalation vulnerability in Android framework.
And without getting too technical, what does that mean?
Well, essentially, it could allow an attacker to access sensitive parts of your device that they shouldn't be able to get to.
I see. And even though Google had shared fixes for these issues with device manufacturers back in January, they were still being exploited.
Unfortunately, yes. It often takes time for these patches to make their way to every single device out there.
And in that time, there's a window of opportunity for bad actors to take advantage.
Exactly.
That's a good reminder for everyone to keep their devices updated.
Yeah.
The longer you wait, the more vulnerable you might be. Okay, ready for our final story?
Hit me with it.
This one's about a cybersecurity company called Rubrik.
I've heard of them. They focus on data protection, right?
That's right. And get this, they had to rotate their authentication keys after breach of their log server.
Oh, the irony.
I know, right? It's like the physician heal thyself situation.
Authentication keys are essentially the master keys to a digital kingdom. They control access to all sorts of sensitive systems and data. So this kind of breach could have major consequences for Rubrik and their customers.
So what happened exactly? Did they get hit with ransomware?
It doesn't seem... So Rubrik says they found some unusual activity on one of their log servers, took it offline immediately, and brought in a third-party forensics team to investigate. They also say that they haven't been contacted by whoever was behind the breach.
Well, at least that's a little reassuring. But isn't this like the second time they've been breached?
You have a good memory.
No.
Yeah, back in 2023, they were caught up in the Fortra Go Anywhere attacks by the Klopp ransomware gang. So their track record isn't exactly spotless.
Not great. But they are saying that their investigation hasn't found any evidence that customer data or their internal source code was compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's the case. And they've managed to contain the damage.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, for sure. And we're back for part two of our deep dive.
You know, it's really interesting to think about CISA and this whole potential shift away from monitoring Russian cyber threats.
Yeah, it just doesn't quite add up, does it?
No, not really. I mean, it seems a little strange that they'd just turn a blind eye to a known player like Russia. You know, especially when you consider their track record. Totally. I mean, they're not exactly known for being subtle or playing by the rules.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So this supposed stand down order, if it's even real, raises a lot of questions. Like, what's the end game here?
Yeah. I mean, are they really trying to de-escalate tensions, or is there something more strategic at play?
Some people have suggested it could be tied to the situation in Ukraine, you know, maybe as a bargaining chip to try and get Russia to back down.
Right. But as we said earlier, there aren't any official negotiations happening right now, at least not publicly.
Exactly. So that kind of throws a wrench in that theory.
It really does. So if it's not about diplomacy, then what is it about? Is it possible they're trying to misdirect Russia, like make them think we're letting our guard down?
Well, we're secretly ramping up our defenses in other areas.
Right. Or maybe, and this is a bit of a scary thought.
Yeah.
What if we've discovered some vulnerability in our own systems and we're trying to fix it before Russia can exploit it?
That's a chilling thought.
It is. It's almost like we're playing a high-stakes game of cyber chess.
With incredibly high stakes.
And any sudden move could have huge consequences.
For sure. One thing's for certain, though. If the U.S. does scale back its offensive capabilities, it could embolden Russia to be even more aggressive.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And that could have ripple effects across the entire global cyber landscape. It's a delicate balance.
Yeah.
And it's a situation we'll need to keep a very close eye on.
Absolutely. Okay, let's shift gears back to that story about Google patching those Android zero-day vulnerabilities.
Right.
I mean, the fact that one of those was reportedly used by Serbian authorities to access confiscated devices.
It's pretty unsettling.
Yeah, it raises a lot of questions about the line between legitimate law enforcement activities and, you know, maybe going a bit too far when it comes to individual privacy.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because on one hand, you want law enforcement to have the tools they need to investigate crimes and keep people safe. But at the same time, no one wants to feel like their personal devices are completely open books to the government.
Right. It's like, where do we draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
And who gets to decide where that line is?
And then you add private companies like Celebrate into the mix, who are developing these tools that can be used for good or bad.
Right. It's not like they're only selling to governments with perfect human rights records.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how do we make sure these technologies don't end up being used for things that most people would consider unethical?
That's the million-dollar question.
It really is. It's a conversation that needs to be happening everywhere at all levels of government in the tech industry and even among everyday users like us.
Right. We need to be asking some tough questions about transparency, accountability, and oversight when it comes to these kinds of technologies.
Because this isn't just about catching criminals, you know?
Yeah.
These tools could be used to target journalists, activists, political dissidents, anyone who those in power see as a threat.
It's a scary thought.
It is.
Yep.
It reminds us that technology is a double-edged sword. It can be used to do amazing things, but it can also be used to infringe on our freedoms and erode our privacy.
Well said. Okay, let's move on to our last story about Rubrik, that the cybersecurity company that had to rotate their authentication keys after a breach.
Yeah.
Talk about ironic.
Right. It's a bit of a physician heal thyself situation.
Definitely. I mean, here's a company that's literally in the business of protecting data, and they get hit with a breach themselves.
It just goes to show that no one is immune to these kinds of attacks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the fact that they lost control of their authentication keys, I mean, those are like the keys to the kingdom.
Without them, you can't access all sorts of critical systems and data. It makes you wonder if a company specializing in cybersecurity can have this kind of lapse. What hope is there for the rest of us?
Right. It really underscores the point that strong security practices are essential for everyone, not just the experts.
So what can we learn from this? What steps can people and organizations take to protect themselves from these types of breaches?
Yeah, what are the key takeaways here?
Well, first of all, everyone needs to remember that security is an ongoing process. It's not a one-time fix.
Right. You can't just set it and forget it.
Exactly. You need to constantly evaluate your systems, look for vulnerabilities, and update your defenses.
And it's not just about having the latest security software. You also need strong policies and procedures in place, and you need to make sure your employees are trained on those policies.
Absolutely. Human error is still one of the biggest weak points in any security system.
Yeah.
So it's crucial to educate your employees about things like phishing scams, strong passwords, and multi-factor authentication.
Right. It's like locking your doors and windows.
Yeah.
It's not foolproof, but it makes it a lot harder for someone to break in.
Exactly. And don't forget about having a good incident response plan.
Because no matter how good your defenses are, there's always a chance that something will slip through the cracks.
Exactly. You need to be prepared to deal with a breach quickly and effectively to minimize the damage. That means having a clear plan in place, knowing who to contact, and having the right tools and resources ready to go.
Great advice. Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. We're wrapping up our deep dive today. And, you know, before we go, I think it's worth taking a minute to step back and think about these stories we've covered and what they tell us about the state of cybersecurity.
It's been a wild ride, hasn't it? I mean, from government agencies maybe shifting strategies to zero-day exploits being used by authorities, and even a cybersecurity company getting breached themselves. It's a lot to take in.
It really is. And I think the thing that stands out to me the most is how these stories really highlight that line between offense and defense in the cyber world and how it's becoming increasingly blurry.
That's a great point. It used to be, you know, a lot more clear-cut who the good guys were and who the bad guys were. You had security researchers finding vulnerabilities and patching them, and then you had the attackers, you know, trying to exploit those vulnerabilities.
Right, but now it seems like everybody's getting in on the game of finding and exploiting vulnerabilities, whether it's governments using zero-day exploits for surveillance or private companies developing these super powerful hacking tools that could be used for good or for evil.
It really makes you wonder who you can trust.
It does. So what can we do about it? I mean, are we just at the mercy of these powerful forces, or are there things we can do to kind of reclaim some control over our digital lives?
Well, I don't think we should just give up quite yet. I mean, there are things we can do, even if we can't directly control what governments and big corporations are doing.
Like what? Give us some practical advice.
Well, first and foremost, we need to be a lot more aware of what data we're sharing and who we're sharing it with.
That's a good point. We click accept on those privacy policies without even reading them.
All the time. And we really need to take a minute and understand what we're agreeing to. What data are we giving away?
And let's not forget the basics. You know, like keeping our software updated, using strong and unique passwords for each of our accounts, and turning on that multi-factor authentication wherever we can.
Those are simple steps, but they can make a huge difference.
It's like locking your doors and windows. It might not be foolproof, but it makes it a lot harder for someone to break in.
Exactly. And we should also remember to be skeptical about everything, you know, especially online. Phishing attacks are getting really sophisticated. So be careful about what links you click on and what attachments you open. If something seems too good to be true,
it probably is.
Exactly. So it's all about being proactive and taking responsibility for our own digital security.
We can't rely on governments or companies to protect us. We need to be informed and empowered to make smart choices ourselves.
Well said. At the end of the day, knowledge is power. The more we understand about the threats out there and how to protect ourselves, the better off we'll be in this ever-changing digital world.
And on that note, we're going to leave you with one final thought to think about. In a world where digital forensics and exploit development are becoming more and more sophisticated, how can we as individuals make sure that our privacy and our data stay protected even against these powerful adversaries who have access to these incredibly powerful tools?
It's a tough question, and there's no easy answer, but it's definitely something we all need to be thinking about.
Absolutely. Well, that wraps up our deep dive for today. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, stay safe, stay informed, and keep those digital shields up.